Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, and welcome to this week's episode of Radio Subs to Address Life. I'm your host, Levon, out of breath, because to be honest, I was in the middle of something, and I was like, goodness gracious, I'm so excited about the show today that I really wasn't focused, and I got off track a little bit, but we are here, we are getting it. We're going to talk about the controversy with the DNC, Bernie Sanders. There was some information leaked to his campaign that potentially should not have been. That hit the airwaves real heavy yesterday. Star Wars, Episode 7, The Force Awakens. I was definitely there, and I did not act a fool, but I was there to witness it and be a part of opening day. It was. It felt like baseball season. It was crazy, man. Lines were long. Movie was great. It was long, but it was every bit worth it. So we'll talk some more about that. We're going to have a special guest from Hollaback, Baltimore on. Miss Oliver is going to come on and talk to us a little bit about street harassment. We've kicked that idea around a little bit, but some of the statistics that she has really shocked us. So we reached out to her, and she's going to come on with us later on. Also, this is another show in which we're going to speed things up a little bit because I still got to work and pay the bills, like you all know. So that's what we got to do today. Cuzzo is trying to get on, and I'm going to have him on pretty soon. But he has some exciting news of his own. He's not going anywhere. It's not that type of situation, but he has some great things going on for himself, and we definitely have to get him to talk about that when the time is right. Hopefully the time is right today. But if not, then we'll talk about that sooner rather than later. What's going on, family?
What's buzzing, cousin? How you doing this lovely Saturday morning, man?
It's cold. Where the hell is the hot weather go?
Hey, I got it. I'm good.
No, fuck.
I'm always hot, man. You feel me?
Screw you. All right, I feel you. All right, so, again, we're going to do a condensed show today, because I still got to pay my bills. So But we got to come with the real for the family, so that's what we're here for, and to do it and knock it out. Brittany Oliver is going to join us in about 25 minutes to talk about the Hollaback Baltimore and their campaign to eradicate street harassment. But Uncle Bernie got in the news for not such a good thing. Looked like he was, not him personally, but his staff was dipping and diving into some information they should not have been privy to. So there were threats going back and forth between his camp and the DNC about should he have had access to that information. He threatened to take the DNC to court, so on and so forth. It all comes from a leak, actually, in the firewall. Now, the company called NGP Vans is charged with keeping voter data housed for the DNC. So there was a breach in their firewall somewhere along the line. One of the cats from Bernie Sanders' camp found it. His name is Josh Erdsky, I want to say. And sorry if I killed your name. I apologize. It was not intentional. But anyhow, Josh made some copies and shared them with three other people in Bernie's camp. He was later fired by the camp, just to duly note that he was later fired. But he claimed that he wanted to share it to show how easy it would have been to gain access to Bernie's information as well, and they were going to report the breach. Obviously, this was too hot of a button topic for anybody to touch, so he was dismissed instead of them fighting the good fight for him and with him to let them know that, you know, we weren't trying to do anything wrong. We just found this. We were trying to submit it to you. Boom. So what he did was wrong. He got the can for it, but it was not before. It was like the opening lasted maybe an hour. They were talking about there was a patch being put in place, but he just so happened to find it. I don't know how you so happened to find a hole like that, but he just so happened to find it before it was breached. So that's the drama coming from the DNC, the Democrat side this week. What do you think, man? You think he was in there trying to dig a little and got his hand stuck in the cookie jar or what?
Oh, yeah, I definitely think that's what it is. You know, when they're running these campaigns, man, you know, people trying to find the edge. And, you know, it's just like the media. You know, you push the envelope, you push it to the limits, and sometimes, you know, you get too far deep into the cookie jar and you get stuck. I really think that's right. Exactly what happened in this situation, and they were probably hoping that, you know, they probably thought they were smarter than everybody else in a sense and thought they could get away with it, and somebody's watching. You know, one thing I learned from my grandmother, somebody's always watching. Always watching. You know?
Always.
And I never believed it until I thought I did something that I would get away with and somebody snitched on me. You know what I'm saying? Because they were watching me from a distance, and they saw what I did, and I got smashed. I really think that this is one of those situations, and, you know, hopefully he can recover from it.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's still in the running, you know. I still see a path for him. I don't think it's over by any stretch of the imagination. A lot of people are counting him out, but I just don't see. I think it's too early. And as I said, what was it, last week, maybe the week before last, Hillary is one or two mistakes away from everyone abandoning the ship again. Now, she's getting a lot of heavy endorsements, heavy doses of endorsements. But Bernie picked up an endorsement from the National Communications Union just the other day. I think it was Wednesday. If not Wednesday, then it was Thursday. I can't remember the date off the top of my head. But it was definitely this week, mid to late this week. And that's huge, because those are the cats that are the media, to be real with you. They're the backbone. Those are the cats out there doing the research. They're doing they're the ones that make sure that radio shows happen. They're the ones that make sure TV shows happen. So almost everyone in the communication industry, as far as media is concerned, is connected directly to them. Those are your cell phone workers, you know what I'm saying, your Verizon, your Sprint, your AT&T, so on and so forth. All those cats are all a part of that union. So that was a huge endorsement for him. Now, Hillary has other labor endorsements, but she has some very strong ones and some very large ones as well. But when you talk about cats on the level of, you know, the National Communications Union supporting you, and that's a big win. That's a very big win for him. So I don't think that he's out of this at all. I think the donations are still coming. He's hitting it the grassroots way, much like Obama did. He doesn't have the large donors as of yet like Hillary has. He has some, but nowhere near as many. But he's definitely still in the fight. And there's not a lot of upswing for O'Malley. Like, there's just not a lot of room for him to go right now in this fight, because he's at 4% now. That is double what he was at before, because before he was tracking very, very low. But now he's up to 4%. So he's definitely climbing up a little bit, but he's still well behind the pack as far as the election is concerned. And we're talking about, this is December. Now, that doesn't mean a whole lot to a lot of people, but pretty soon we're going to have a lot of Super Tuesdays. You know, since February, March, you start hitting these caucuses in Iowa and New Hampshire and so on and so forth. These things really start to come into play, and it starts to come into play really, really quickly. You know, these folks will vote over here. These folks will vote over there. This is more starting to pop off very, very quickly. You know, we don't have a whole lot of time left for President Obama. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's almost gone. in about a year, it's right around 13 months. He's done. That's it.
Hey, so do you think that people who are nowhere near the front of the pack and who are closer to, you know, last place to anything, do you think that they should bow out at this point?
I can't call it. And I can't call it because there's going to be a wild horse in here somewhere. Who it's going to be, I'm not sure. But it's going to be a wild horse in there somewhere. So on the Republican side, it's just way too many of those jokers. They really need to get it together. You know, decide on who's going to go forward and who's not. But for the most part, yeah, a number of them can go. And I think you will see a number of them dwindle, especially after the new year. You really will see it. Right now, it's looking like it's the push between Trump, Cruz, and Rubio. Now, I was about to say Santorum. Listen, I was about to sound like Donald. I was about to sound like Chris Christie when he was talking about King Hussein. we'll get to that in a minute. But if Christie has strong showing in New Hampshire, pulls off of South Carolina, that really changes the dynamics of the affair. If he doesn't, then, yeah, he's done at that point too. You know what I'm saying? Because then you have to start looking at it like, okay, I don't need to piss anybody off anymore. I need to put myself in a position where I could potentially be somebody's running mate. So you don't want to piss off those who are in the front of the pack, because you may wind up being in right along with them sooner rather than later. So, you know what I'm saying? I see that. Now, on the Democratic side, this is really a Hillary and Bernie fight. That's it. O'Malley's, he's null and void. He's nothing. As he should be, but he's really null and void.
Yeah, I asked that question because, you know, for a couple of things you said. One, there's going to be a wild horse somewhere. Somebody's going to surprise people, you know, after New Year, and make a push and make some noise. So what can happen is either that person's surprise push is going to gain other people's attention and might swing votes their way, or the way I look at it is, okay, you don't win the presidency. But what happens a lot of times, it helps you with, you know, running for the Senate, you know, and congressional seats and stuff like that later on. So with somebody like O'Malley, who is young, he still stands a lot to gain by staying in the race. Win, lose, or draw, he gains a lot from it. On the Republican side, I think their strategy is, let's monopolize the entire race. Let's put, I think it was at one point 20 plus candidates at one point. Now we're down to, what, 13 or something like that? Mm-hmm. But ultimately, I think they have the whole strategy for the Republican Party, and I think this is something that they agreed upon together. Well, let's just monopolize the whole field. Let's put as many candidates as we can out there. Because, again, even on their side, only one person can be the president, but that helps them with seats and votes as far as gaining control of Congress. You know what I'm saying? So I think it's strategy on both sides, the reason why they're doing, but why they're working things the way they're working. And I think it's going to, if whoever wins the presidency, that side is going to win, is going to control the Congress after the elections are over.
Well, I agree with that. I disagree with that, because I think that the midterm elections, yeah, we'll see a shift in the Congress, hopefully, and a shift more toward the liberal side, more or less than what we got going on right now, because this shit is ridiculous. However, let's not knock everything. Your boy Paul Ryan is busy. Your Speaker Ryan is busy. $1 trillion spending bill just went through Congress. Like, this cat done got that through. He got the highway bill through. You know what I'm saying? Those are no small feats in the environment that we've come accustomed to.
But these were Democratic pushes. These are things that President Obama was pushing while Boehner was there. That
I agree, but Ryan got it to go through. So Ryan
said,
"Yo, look."
But he's a Democratic. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, but the thing is, those were Democratic
propositions. Mm-hmm.
Proposals, you know, and
well,
and yeah, he got him to go through. So that's why I say that the swing will go back if the Democrats win. The swing will go back to the Democrats as far as being a majority. But either way, whichever side wins, they'll have the momentum because of the things that he's doing now. Because people are going to look at it like, okay, yeah, he got them done, but these are Democratic proposals. Then if the Republicans win, they'll say, well, our guy got it done. You know what I'm saying? So they'll be able to,
right,
you know, push on it like that. So he's actually practicing in a bipartisan way that's going to benefit himself and whichever party wins the election. It's crazy how it's set up right now. I mean, it's a good thing. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. It's a great thing that we have it like this, because this is the bipartisanship that President Obama wanted from the beginning. And now it's happening.
Okay.
But as a result, you know, it's
as he
like
goes out the door.
50. Huh? Yeah, as he goes out the door.
As he goes out the door.
Because now they can say, like, well, look, we got this done. We got this done. But, you know, don't forget. Let's not forget. Let's not lose track of what's been happening and these things that President Obama has been pushing for the last 3 years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or more.
I'm tracking with you. All right. Now, I spoke and laughed off Christy earlier. And I laughed it off because this fool says I would express to King Hussein, that you have a friend again. The man's been dead since the 90s. So, you know, first off, let's get your facts straight before you start talking. Now you sound like Sarah Palin talking about, I stand on my porch and I can see Russia. Really? Really, you can stand on your porch and you can see Russia. Okay, no problem. You know, hey, you got some good-ass eyes. You know, I know Alaska's really close, you know, but you got some good-ass eyes, you know. Hey, that's what you see, then if you like it, I love it. And that's why I'll leave that. But
hey, Alaska's a marijuana state, right?
Not yet, but it needs to. You know, obviously somebody been toting while they was in office. Speaking of seeing something new, Wolf 1061C. If you're not familiar with it, please get familiar with it, because you're going to hear about it a whole hell of a lot. This is the closest potentially habitable planet. It's 13.8 light years away, astronomers say. Now, it's four times the size of Earth, not too hot, not too cold. It sets itself up to potentially have a life source like ours, which is water. Let's remember, the majority of our body is water. So it sets itself up to have a life source like ours. The atmosphere is very similar to from what they've found, what they've discovered as well. It's between, I think it's between two suns or two moons or some crap like that. You know, some of the stuff I read from script because we actually take the time to do it. Others I just remember because I'm a nerd like that. And, you know, things like this just stick in my mind because I get happy when I hear about this. And I get happy because I've never been one to believe that we are in this whole thing by ourselves. The universe is just way too damn big for us to just be here by ourselves. Not saying that, you know, we're going to get invaded or we've invaded. Hell, we might have invaded another planet by now while you're bullshitting, but I don't believe that we're here by ourselves. And for us to sit back and think about that, that's just dumb. And then the other side of it is, you know, certain folks are trying to get away from certain other folks. So you are definitely going to hear about this more often because they're trying to get as far away from us as they possibly can. If they're like 13.6 light years, that might be far enough.
I'd make it.
You know what I'm saying? I'll risk it. Fuck it. Yeah. And speaking of planets and stars far, far away, that was a cool-ass segue. Star Wars The Force Awakens, Episode 7, hit theaters this weekend. I was there Thursday night, and I was tired as hell yesterday. You hear me? That movie is long. My start time was 10:45. I theater around 1:30. It is long. That movie is long, dog. But that movie is good as hell. You hear me? It is good as hell. It definitely lives up to the hype, and I saw some people walking out, and I was like, I gotta ask, and I asked one simple question: was it good? And a couple of cats told me the same exact answer: it lived up to the hype. And I was like, cool. And when I sat down, and them freaking credits started rolling, I lost my mind. I felt like I was freaking 6 years old. Well, actually, I was younger than that. I was about four. I felt, when the first one came out. I was 4 years old again, and I was just happy, like, oh, yes. It was good, man. If you haven't seen it yet, see it. I'm definitely thinking about going to see it again. That's how good it was. This will definitely be added to the collection. I will definitely, this, and I thought, did I talk about Creed? Have I talked about that yet?
No.
Well, Creed will definitely be added to the collection as well. If you haven't seen Creed, check out Creed. Creed was a damn good movie, without a doubt. And, you know, people have asked me, what do you think is better, Creed or Star Wars? And I'll be honest, I think Creed was better. And it's the whole formula really just worked. There were certain points in Star Wars where I was like, You know what I mean? But in Creed, everything really went together. It really all went together, and it all made sense. Not saying that anything in Star Wars didn't make sense. It didn't make sense, but it was some stuff that was like, really didn't need to show that. Like, what was the point of that? You know what I'm saying? Much like NWA. Like, that was a great movie all the way up until the scene in the desert. I was like, wow, that just made no sense to me. That could have been conveyed in another way. It kind of was a small hiccup in the movie. You know, I understand Dre lost his brother. That was important. Why to the group? Don't really. You know, that was their swarmdom of brotherhood forever, which, as we all know, didn't last. But shouts out to them anyhow because they did get elected to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame this week. So shouts out to NWA for doing that. Yeah, man, I think it was their fourth time being up, and they finally got selected to go into the hall, so that's a beautiful situation.
I think the movie had a lot to do with that.
Oh, without a doubt.
You know, people really didn't give them the respect and the credit that they deserved or the recognition until the movie came out. I don't understand how. Maybe because, you know, some of the people who were working for, you know, a lot of these companies now really don't know much about NWA. They know that they existed, you know, they know they were hard, but as far as them being groundbreaking, I don't think the people really recognized that until the movie came out. because of they right. lack the history and the knowledge of it.
Right. And, you know, groundbreaking really, really, really is what they are and were. You know, flashback to Star Wars for a minute. It is definitely on pace to the largest opening weekend ever. It has hit 225 million plus thus far. Estimates show late Friday evening. The updated estimate from Disney places the seventh Star Wars movie more than 16 million ahead of the 6-month-old record by Universal's Jurassic World, which opened at 208.4 million on the June 12th through 14th weekend. It's getting rave reviews everywhere. It's smashing records everywhere. It hit like over 100 million on its first day. First day it hit over 100 million. And I saw it, man. The place was packed. I went to a Rundle Mills Mall, and if you've ever been here to Baltimore, definitely got to check out a Rundle Mills Mall. It's a very nice mall. But that mug on a Thursday night looked like it would on a Friday, on a Saturday afternoon. That monster was packed. It was packed. I had to park ever away. It was a walk to. A lot of people got there early because I got my tickets based off of the fact that I thought I was going to have to work. So I was like, which I wound up having to do. So I bought my tickets based around that and give myself some comfort, some cush, so I wouldn't miss the movie or give myself enough time to get there and get in line so I can get a good seat and all that type of jazz. When I got in line, it was a long line. Theater, when I got in the theater, it was, I want to say 80-85% packed just from the line. Before the movie started, it was to capacity. It was full. You know what I'm saying? They had showings from, I can't even remember what time the first one was, but the last one was at 1 o'clock in the morning. Dog, this thing was insane. They had a separate check-in area just for people with Star Wars tickets. Separate from everything else, just for people with Star Wars tickets. It was insane how thorough this thing was. It's definitely a juggernaut. And then the Stormtroopers R2-D2 appeared at the daily press briefing at the White House. So that was awesome. You know what I'm saying? Everyone right now has Star Wars mania, and it's a beautiful thing to see because it's a great story, man. You know, I've run into people talking about I've never seen any of them. And I was like, how do you not watch Star Wars?
I've never seen it before, cuz. Ever.
Are you serious? How do you not watch Star Wars?
Yeah, I'm not a sci-fi person to begin with, you know, and I think most of the sci-fi stuff that I have seen, I've been disappointed. So I've never watched it before. I've never been tuned into it, you know, Star Trek, Star Wars, none of that stuff. I've never watched it, man. The closest thing to Star Wars I ever watched before was Spaceballs, and it was funny as hell.
There's a part two to that coming out.
Don't worry, that's what I'm talking about. I'll watch that. It's a comedy more than anything. You know what I'm saying? But I'll watch it on DVD. But
Spaceballs is funny. Spaceballs is funny. Mel Brooks just announced that he's doing it. Like, they're supposed to start shooting sometime next year. So that's going to be, I know it's going to be hilarious because the first one was hilarious as hell. You know what I'm saying? But obviously John Candy won't be a part of it, which is huge, and nor will Joan Rivers be a part of it. But they may be able to synthesize Joan Rivers' voice. So that might still happen because there's a lot of her talking. So that, with the aid of computers and all kinds of programming nowadays, that might not be that big of an issue that she's no longer with us, because they can just sample her voice and make it say whatever they wanted to say, as long as her daughter provides the okay to do it. So that may happen, but, you know, John Candy is no longer with us, and he was actually full in the movie. So with him being gone, there's nothing really to get him back. You know, but who knows? You know, this is Mel Brooks. I wouldn't be shocked if he found out something. I wouldn't be shocked at all. Not at all.
It's definitely a capability that's realistic. So, yeah, it's going to happen.
Okay. Well, we got to shut up because our guest is coming on. We got to welcome the sister as only we can. Good morning, Miss Oliver.
Good morning. How are you all?
We're
doing
welcome.
Well. Good morning to you, young lady.
Again, family, Brittany Oliver is on with us. She is the lead. She is the lady. She is everything you need to know when it comes to Baltimore as far as the Holla Back campaign is concerned. So I reached out to you because I saw the city paper, and it said, you know, stop calling me Bay. And I was like, what's that all about? So I started reading the article, and I called Cousin. I'm like, Cuz. He was like, what's up, cuz? I said, y'all, I'm reading this article. And from the front, the first thing that comes to mind is, well, how the hell are you supposed to talk to a young lady if you don't know her? Then I started reading, and I was like, oh. All right.
Okay.
There's more to it than that. You know what I'm saying? But then I came back to, but still, how are you supposed to greet a young lady? So I said, let me find out. Here you are. Thank you very much for joining us. Please tell us about the program, what your mission is, and the talk about the Stop Street Harassment movement.
Sure. So thanks so much for having me on this morning. And thanks so much for continuing to read the article.
Happy reading.
Title. that's really important. So I am in Baltimore. Holla Back Baltimore is a nonprofit anti-street harassment organization that advocates on behalf of women and LGBTQ individuals in our community. And our chapter has been around since about 2010. I became co-director of Holla Back in February of this year. We're all volunteer run. So I do all Holla Back related things outside of work. My day job, I work at the ACLU of Maryland, the American Civil Liberties Union. So our campaign pretty much is just it's just trying to gear, educate people on what gender-based harassment is. And we get those questions all the time, right? The questions are, what is appropriate, what's not appropriate. You know, street harassment is something that I have personally had experienced since puberty. And it was always something that I thought was just, it just comes with the territory. It's something that you just accept. You know, it's a part of me being a woman. It's just being catcalled on the street, even as a teenager, a young teen. So the more I started getting involved, I've always had an interest in doing activist work ever since I was a kid. And as soon as I got to college, I attended Towson University and discovered there was a Holla Back chapter in Baltimore and did some volunteer work for them. So that was really the start of where I was getting to a point where I was like, I can talk about this and I don't have to accept this. This is not something that I'm supposed to just be okay with just because I am a woman. So the article itself, just by the city paper, Stop Calling Me Baby, that had been rearing up ever since around the summertime. But this work has been going on for years. And Holla Back itself, we have a organization, it's a wide network of groups all over globally. So Holla Back originally started back in 2005, back in New York City. So there is a chapter there, and then there are chapters in different states as well, and as well as in other countries. So that's really pretty much what go ahead.
No, please, go ahead.
So that's pretty much what, what we have been doing, especially when I came on in February. I felt like it was really important to have a woman of color, particularly a black woman, speaking out about these issues. And I found that there were a lot of women who were you know, who were coming to me and saying, hey, you know, this is great. You know, how can I talk about these things in my circles? And what can I do to help, you know, fight the larger issue, you know, of, you know, violence against women and institutional sexism in our society and that sort of thing. So street harassment is specifically one, a symptom of a larger, a broader issue of, you know, gender-based harassment, sexual violence, et cetera.
Now, don't be stealing my thunder, because I got notes, so you can't be hitting on the points that I was going to talk about in my notes.
I talk about this so much. No, certainly, certainly.
Don't be hitting on all kinds of stuff I want to talk about. So I'm reading the article, and the opening was like, damn. So the opening starts with a 15-year-old young lady being catcalled, relatively speaking, by an older gentleman, 40-something.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, yo. Now, Brittany, where are you from?
So I'm from Baltimore. I grew up Baltimore all my life.
Okay, so I went to Merva, and I'm remembering my first year at Merva, and I'm walking through the halls, and most of the young ladies that I went to high school with looked like young ladies. But there were a couple of young ladies that I went to high school with freshman year. They looked like some grown-ass women. I was like, good, ooh. Where all that come from? And you, how old you? Now, there was a whole transitionary period, I'm sure you recall this, in which we, being men, were very ignorant. It's like, you know, it's one of them Similac babies and all these other things we used to say about young ladies, and that all that stuff started racing through my mind. But then I'm getting on it, and it says, you know, 84% of women first experience sexual harassment, and I never thought about it as sexual harassment, to be honest with you, until a mutual friend of ours, Ellen G, shout out to Ellen, we were in discussion one day, and she was talking to me about she was leaving an event, and there were some guys across the street. And they caught up. She's gorgeous. And they came over. So as they were coming over, she mentally prepared herself to them to address her in a certain way. And before they addressed her, she addressed them and said, don't bother me. And I'm sitting there like, okay. Now, I'm thinking that she felt truly physically threatened. It wasn't that. She went on to explain she felt mentally threatened. Like, she didn't want to be bothered by anything that they had to say, period. One guy out of the three still stepped up and said, you know, I apologize, Miss Lady, but, you know, I saw you from across the street. By the way. She's like, look, don't bother me. I'm just not for it today. And he said, okay, and he went about his way. Again, never would I have thought about that as harassment or assault or anything of that nature, because as a youth, male, led by others who were not so wise or as sharp, the echo is, you know, you got to say something in order to get something. So that's why I called Cousin initially and said, yo, how are you supposed to approach a young lady that you don't know? So and this is why definitely wanted to have you on today to talk about that. Because, honestly, I want to learn. I need to know. You know, I'm a single dude out here. I'm trying to, you know, say hello. And it's like Wonder Woman with the bracelet. Like, God, I'm like, whoa, pump your brakes. I said, I don't want to say anything to you beyond hello. I don't want to say anything to you beyond, sis, how was your day? That's it. You know, hey, sis, let me get that door for you. That's it. But again, looking at this really, these things, and there's some more stuff we're going to talk about. I'm going to shut up for a minute so you can counter what I just had to say. But these things give me some insight as to why I'm getting the Wonder Woman bracelets. Like, putting up the shield all over the place. Like, okay, but, mm-hmm. so what's how do you do it? Help me, help a brother out. I'm trying to learn.
Sure. No, and you know, and it is so, you know, like even talking with you and hearing you say I want to learn more about that, it's very welcoming because that is not, you know, to get that for, you know, men is, you know, your voices are large, you know, are important in these conversations. And that, you know, that doesn't get across to a lot of, you know, people who I've run into before. but it's a process. You know, so those feelings that Ellen, you know, had explained to you are, you know, something that is all very relatable. You know, before, I mean, it happens to me now, even doing this work. Anytime that I know that I'm going to be walking somewhere, you know, by myself, I don't normally do this if I know I'm going to be with friends or I'm going to be with a, you know, group of people. But if I know I'm going to be by myself, I pretty think about the whole experience. So I'll make sure that there, you know, that, and, you know, I'll make sure that the way I'm dressed, I'll worry about the way I'm dressed. I'll worry about where I park at. You know, I'll worry about if, you know, where's my phone? Do I have, you know, I don't, when I'm walking down the street, I don't have my phone. I'm not looking at my phone because I want to be alert and attentive about what, you know, what's going on around me. So these are things that you know, a lot of women and LGBTQ individuals prepare for.
I'm sorry to cut you off, but, you know, and that's sad. You know, like, being vigilant mm-hmm. is one thing, but to have to go down a checklist before you leave the house,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah.
that's a sad state of mind to have to live in, you know, on a day-to-day basis, in a sense. You know,
mm-hmm.
we have enough to deal with, you know, with police brutality and, mm-hmm. you know, gang violence and drugs and stuff like that to worry about. Then before I leave my house, as a woman, I have to check, you know, okay, am I dressed appropriately just to walk down the doggone street to catch the bus? You know, let me make sure I end all my phone calls before I start. I mean, that's crazy that you have to have that state of mind and live
mm-hmm.
with that
yeah.
every single day.
Yeah, you know,
I had to say
kind
that.
No, it's fine. It, you know, it's kind of like built up. In, you know, you have anxiety. I literally have anxiety when I'm out alone, you know, walking by my. If I know I'm going to be alone walking by myself. I mean, over the years, I've gotten a lot better with it. But it's definitely something that, you know, stems from, you know, being a teen and when puberty hit for me and that sort of thing. And, you know, it's just, you know, it's, again, it just connects it to this larger issue of, you know, just sexualizing women's bodies and seeing it in that way all the time. There are certainly differences in catcalls and compliments. And that's one thing that I try to make very clear. You know, there is nothing wrong with speaking to someone on the street. You know, of course, it goes beyond just saying hi. And because we experience this so much, you kind of know, even when someone says hi to you, and depending on what environment you're in, depending on how things are, you can kind of tell if they're just, you know, If they're genuinely saying hello and interested, or if they're, you know, or if it seems like they're going to say something to you, because, like, a lot of times, you know, when you don't respond or you don't say something, you know, some women, some LGBTQ individuals are afraid of retaliation, of, you know, being followed. I can give you a perfect example that happened. There's an area here in Baltimore called South Point, and I was in that neighborhood on a Saturday night trying to get to one of my classes. I dance a lot, so I have instructors that have to teach in certain areas. So I was going, you know, getting to where I was going to go that evening, and I had a gentleman step in front of me while I was walking he stepped in front of me to stop me from walking. I walked around him, didn't say a word, you know, because this is something that I kind of expected already. Walked around. You know what he said to me? And this is a brother that said this to me. He said, you know what? And he's yelling this at me. He said, I didn't want to talk to you anyway. Go straighten your hair. Go. I didn't. go get a perm. I didn't want to talk to you anyway. He told me to go get a perm. This is a brother. This is someone that looks like me that told me this. We grow the same hair, and he told me to go and do that. So that is an example. I always use that, just really quickly, I always use that as an example to say that's one way of how black women, and particularly how street harassment for black women can be racialized because of my hair texture. A comment on that, my hair is not straight enough or something. So go ahead.
I mean, there's no secret that there's a lot of ignorant brothers on the face of the earth, right? But I think what's happening is it's a battle in a sense between the good guys and the good girls and the ignorant people in between. Because while on one side you have young ladies who carry themselves appropriately, and you have young men. You have ladies and men who carry themselves appropriately. In between those two, what's keeping these two parties from coming together and meeting all the ignorant people in between. And every once in a while, a nice young lady will come across, will cross paths with an ignorant young man. And every once in a while, a nice man will come, who will cross paths with an ignorant young lady. And I say
they don't exist.
Right, not at all. And I think that's part of the problem, too, is that, is the ownership of the communication process. And I say that because one time, while you have that story, I had a story where I spoke to a young lady, just a hello type thing, and she went in on me, like, I don't know, I got a man, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, yo, hold on, baby, like, I didn't ask you to marry me, I just said hello. You know what I'm saying? I didn't get on my knee, ask you to marry me. All I did was say hello. So I understand the apprehension and the preparedness that some women take, but I think you got to be careful with taking that stance with every person that comes your way, because that goes back to the comments that some women make where they say there's no good men out there. But if you approach every man that comes your way with the same kind of what it's like McCurry said over there with the Wonder Woman braces on, that tears down the communication dynamics between men and women. Again, you have to recognize that there's good and evil on both sides, but I think it's too much of the ignorance in between the good that's keeping people from being productive as far as the male female communication is
concerned. Right. Right. So what I'll say, in terms of, women or anyone that you approach and you get a response like that, one thing you have to think about is, that her response came from somewhere, right? So the way that she responded is like, let's think about that for a second. It's like, why did she respond the way that she did? Let me finish. It probably was not, in whatever way she responded, I wasn't there. But in whatever way she responded and reacted in that way, it's like, to me, that signals to me that there's something has been happening where, where she's probably experienced that before, or something very triggering. I know, calling me baby, that's triggering, because it's like you can say hello without using terms like that, like I said, it comes from somewhere, and it's like one, and I'm not excusing it. There certainly is a communication issue for sure. I and other activists, around certainly, recognizing that it's really about making the communication better and just separating the differences between what's saying, hello, and, an actual, speaking, and then it turning into something else. Those differences is where it comes in at, but it's certainly, on just a communication issue like that, needs to be, that needs to be a lot better for sure.
I understand. Again, I'm not in no way saying that women shouldn't feel harassed in certain situations. But just like I like to play devil's advocate a little bit without choosing sides too much. And what I say is, yes, that it might come from someplace. Her response might have came from someplace. But some men will probably say, well, don't you think that I might be responding to you a certain way because of things that I experienced with women? Like, what would you say about that? You know, what if I had taken that experience and the way that lady went in on me, and what if I, from that point on, I approached every woman with hostility because I came to this one lady. First of all, I didn't even come at her. I really was just saying hello. Like, nothing behind it, no one to lead into a conversation. I speak to everybody. I feel like, you know, saying good morning is free. It's good for my soul. So I speak to everybody. I was born and raised in Baltimore, but I live. You know, I act like I'm like from the South. Like as far as I wave to everybody, hey, good morning, good morning, good morning. And I approach this lady, hey, good morning, how you doing? And she just went in on me. So what if from that point forward, I took every interaction I had with women in the future and it related to that one experience and said, well, I'm going to call every lady a bitch because this one lady from this, you know, from back in my past went in on me just by me saying hello.
So
what do you say to men and women who go like that?
Yeah, I mean, my answer is pretty much that our experiences shape who we are. They shape the way that we respond and communicate to people and that sort of thing. And that's why I'm saying that it's connected. It is connected to a larger issue. It's you know, a larger issue of dealing with communication and sexual violence. And you know, I mean, that's why I'm saying it's not just street harassment and that's it. It's connected to other things. Other broader, you know, problems that we have in our society that creates these cultures, right? So,
right.
You know, you have, you know, for example, you know, a lot of times in a lot of these discussions, and this is why I'm really glad to be a part of the movement because I'm able to point these things out and stand firmly behind them. But, you know, men of color are often, you know, seen as, in larger discussions, are often seen as the predators. And, you know, these issues around harassment and that sort of thing. Now, here's the thing, though. When it comes to race, racism is not an excuse for sexism. So that's one thing that I need a lot of, what I'd like a lot of people to understand. Because we get this back and forth, and I think it's, you know, it's just the power dynamic, I think, that we have in the type of, you know, this society, this wonderful society that we live in. You know, it's not an excuse for sexism. So that is a thing, right? Like men of color being seen as the predators. And when it comes to white men, you know, especially white men harassed, they just do it in different ways. They do it in more insidious ways. They do it in the office. They do it at frat parties.
Yeah.
They do it, you know what I mean? So that is, in itself, that is well, very well taken. But we must address, especially when it comes to black women, that can't be the only argument all the time when it's like, you know, it's like, okay, like we experience street harassment from men of color, from black men. You know, like I can, it should not be an issue for them to say, I experienced street harassment from black men. And then have someone come back to me and say, well, you know, black men, you know, we're hyper-sexualized and all this other stuff, and the whole movement is white, and it's like that is not a proper way. That's not, that, you know, that, you know, it's almost counterproductive. And also, too, I want to say that, you know, so that experience that I explained about that, you know, that the brother, you know, telling me to, what, you know, straighten my hair or whatever. So I realized that he is not, he does not represent every black man.
Right. That's,
he does not. He don't represent. In that moment, I was, you know, I have dealt with this type of stuff for a long time. So I've had to build up a lot of, you know, being able to take that type of stuff in. So it hurt because he looked like me. It hurt mainly because he looked like me. And, you know, but at the same time, I know that he don't represent every black man in Baltimore. or
that's
beyond.
That's what I'm looking for. That's what I'm looking for, because, you know, a lot of times people take their experiences and they blanket everybody with those
right.
experiences. And I think that this young lady blanketed her, I don't know how many encounters she had. I'm going to, because she was a pretty woman, so I'm assuming that she get hit on a lot. And I'm assuming that by her get hit on a lot that, you know, some of these men are ignorant men. So with those experiences, she just automatically assumed and blanketed every man who approached her, and she was prepared, like you said before. And again, like I said, it's a sad state of mind to have to be in, but you have to be cautious, because I could have been someone who, like you have these undercover bosses and stuff like that, I could have been somebody that had a check in my pocket for $500, and I'm looking for somebody nice to give this $500 to. And because of her experiences, instead of her allowing the situation to progress, she had her guards up already, not prepared to put her guards up. She already had her guards up and just turned the conversation, or again, it wasn't a conversation that needed to be had, but just destroyed any potential for a conversation or any kind of blessing to come her way because of her experiences. So I think they have,
I gotta
people,
jump
have
in.
People in general. Go ahead.
I got to jump in. Because we only have her for a certain amount of time, and though the conversation is lovely, so Brittany, you know you got to come back. I need
yeah,
to.
Yeah, I don't want
to
stop, man. I don't want to stop.
I didn't do all this research to let it go by the wayside. So I'm going to continue because we need to comment on that too. So I was leading on 84% of women's first experience with some type of sexual harassment, as you said. Occurs before they're 17, most between the age of 13 and 14. Now, this survey was conducted among 16,000 women in over 22 countries. Now, there were two that really stuck out for me as far as the women were concerned. Liz Kanamachi, and if I said your name, Liz, wrong, I'm sorry. But she was on an eighth grade trip up to Philly, and she was catcalled, if you wanted to say that. And her experience was that she and her friends wanted to talk it through. Now, from what I gather, reading in between the lines, that's not a common thing. And I want to say her name is Maga. She's originally from New Delhi, India. She commented and said that her first experience was actually the opposite. She didn't want to talk about it anymore. She internalized it. Now, the notes from India were very, very eye-opening because there, 80% of women find themselves being harassed by the time they're 15. 23% of them by 10, by the age of 10. What in the hell do you see as a grown-ass man in a 10-year-old girl? I don't get that one at all. Now, I understand, you know,
sexual predator.
Exactly. That is straight up sex, being a borderline rapist. And that's something that ain't cool in no way, shape, or form. But the other part of it was story about how her brother reacted or didn't react when he was out with her. If she was approached by a car full of men, and he withdrew from her, he never wanted to go out with her again. And, you know, for me, that was a powerful statement because no matter what, any man in your life wants to take care of you. He wants, and not take care of you. Please don't start tweeting me and killing me with the email. I'm talking about protecting you as he should. He should be in some way, shape, a protector for you. You know what I'm saying? You're out with him. It's his responsibility to make sure that you're taken care of. And she thought that it was his feeling that he was much smaller than they, and if this ever happened again, he really would not be able to help his sister. So he shied away from her. You know what I'm saying? I thought that was very poignant. That really hit me. I was like, wow. I never would have thought of that in that way. Unless I read it there, you know what I'm saying? So, as the stories went on, because I know some additional story swapping went on. How did it? Had you heard common stories like this before?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we, you know, on our website, we use our website as a way for people to share. You know, we have a section of the website where people share their, you know, share their stories, because really that is how, you know, that's how we're able to keep this movement going, by folks that were sharing their stories. And I certainly have submission stories from, you know, from that, you know, that experience, from that angle as well. And I have talked, you know, I've talked to, you know, younger, we have a youth program. So I've talked to young, you know, talked to both younger men or younger boys and girls about, you know, these issues. So yeah, you know, the best way that I can think of to think about how people can have more productive conversations around this issue is, you know, and how to be, you know, like, what do you do, right? Like, what, as a man, like, what can I do? How can I help? And that sort of thing. So bystander intervention, you know, is where you pretty much, you know, you have the tool, you, like, you know how to, you know, be a part of the change. You know, one thing I think is really important, too, is to the not all men argument. You know, it's like, for example, I know street harassment is exists, and I get it all the time. I know it exists, but, you know, I don't do it, and my two friends don't do it. So, you know, the person that, you know, that's responding to you, what is she so upset for if I just say hello to her? So the best way to take that is to compare that to the not all cops argument, right?
Right.
You know, we know that there's an issue. We got an issue in this country right now with police brutality, police harassment, and all those things. But the not all cops arguments don't help either.
I'm glad you went that way, because as this all boils down and works out, some other statistics came out, which are about 20% of sexual violence or rape cases get reported. Now, the reasons for that is self-blame, guilt, shame, humiliation, fear of not being believed, or lack of trust of the justice system. So those who are victims of street harassment, and most black folks got the same problem. We don't trust justice.
Right, and that is, you know, that is spot on. And it's also another, you know, that actually reminds me, it's one of the reasons why, you know, at Halifax, you know, we pushing for more in the criminal justice system is not a thing. I've gotten many questions about a street harassment law and all that kind of stuff. I have no faith that is the way to go. I think, you know, because it will in doubt criminalize more men of color than anyone, and that sort of thing. So what we focus on, or what I tend to focus on, is just advocacy, just educational efforts to get people involved and that sort of thing. But again, when we're talking about it, just, you know, I always like to use that example of not all men versus not all cops. Because if we sat here and talked about every single situation about why a black man decided to run from the police, when the cops just walk up to you and say, "Hey, you know, what's going on?" or just approaching you, and you have a reaction, right? Whether the reaction is
right.
You talk with the cop or you run or whatever that is,
right.
You know. So that's the case. If that's what we're going to focus on, because we're treating street harassment that way, so we're talking about, so we're getting deeper, right? We're not saying, so we're talking a lot more about how not to interact with cops, instead of holding the cop accountable for his power that he has over that individual. So you see, it's the same. It's something that I like to bring and compare, because a lot of people don't, try to see the disconnect. I'm telling you, it's paradigm. And extreme harassment is about power. It's about control. And it is not about just saying hello. It's a power dynamic. So just keep that in mind while we're talking, and from moving forward, just talking about these conversations. And again, these are symptoms to larger issues of the society that we are in currently today.
Gotcha. On that note, young lady, please give your contact information. We got to move on, but we definitely appreciate you, and we do need you to come back, honestly.
We have to finish this
much more robust conversation, and we've kept you already over our time with you, but we definitely got to let you go. But before then, please tell folks how they can get in touch with the organization.
Sure. So you can email bmore@ihalibac.org, or you can just go just to our website and just you can just Google Hollaback Baltimore. Our information will come up, and we are also, of course, on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and all the other millions of channels. People get information these days. So just type in bmore at ihalibac.org to reach me directly. And I want to thank both of you so much for having me on today.
Oh, it's not a problem.
But hold on, before you run, spell that out, please, because, some folks will have the Ebonic vernacular for it, and other folks will have the proper English vernacular for it. So
sure.
You're saying holla or holler? There's a difference there.
Sure.
It's radio.
So
it is, break that out.
Yeah. So be more at I holla back. So I-H-O-L-L-A.
There you go.
BACK.org.
There you go. Thanks a lot, sis. Again, we'll be reaching out to you very soon so we can get you back on. We need a much more robust conversation about this, and we're going to have some fun.
Sure.
With it, okay?
Sure. Yeah, thank you so much. I look forward to hearing back from you soon.
Thank you so much, Brittany. Have a great day.
Thanks, you too.
All right, peace. All right, Cuzzo.
Definitely a good conversation, man.
Man, look, awesome sister. Definitely had to bring on to talk about that. Got more facts. Got way more facts. We didn't get to them all, but that's all right. I told her I'd do my research now. We got guests on. I got the research going on. The research team is in full effect. So the Golden State Warriors finally lost their first game, and that's okay. They're still having one hell of a season. But they need to be fearful because the San Antonio Spurs are still out there doing their thing as they normally do. Real bad boys move in silence. And they are slowly but surely building one hell of a team. And they're gelling. Pop got them going. He got them going well. He threw some new pieces in there this year. So it's taking a little time for them to gel, and they're really starting to come together. Now you'll start to see him rest more people more often. To rely on that bench some more, see what kind of productivity he can really get out that bench, so on and so forth.
The irony in that is that they lost that game last Saturday, but then they played the Bucks, who beat them last Saturday. They played them again last night. Mm-hmm. And the Bucks are getting more off of their money, and they pulled it out 121 to 112. Carolina Panthers.
The Carolina Panthers are still undefeated. I saw some flack about them potentially losing this weekend to the New York Giants, New York Football Giants. I don't see that happening, but anything's possible. The game's never over until the game is played, so we'll see. In light skin news, light skin did it again. TGT and broke up because Genuine has snuck off and made a new album. Now, if this sounds familiar, if you ever watched the Five Heartbeats, it damn sure sound like it. Genuine and crept off in the cut, made a new album. So TGT is no more. They're trying to figure out what they're going to do to get it together or put it back together. They may bring in another person, in order to be that third wheel and move forward like that. Don't know, but, you know, Lightskinned did it again. Damn. Broke up the group. First the Fat Boys break up, and now this. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, this is on the heels of Tyrese's mother making a recovery, so at least he waited until then to pull that shenanigans fully. And that's where we are. Family, thank you for joining us this week. Cuz, you got anything important? Okay.
Hey, man. My bad. I was very dangerous about something, man. Yeah, hey, always a pleasure, man. Good conversation today. I appreciate it.
Peace. So next week, you all be good. Be safe.
Peace.